Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, you know what we are. We're like the Basketball Jones, only without the fun.
Someone left that as part of the review on iTunes. It's my favorite review of all time now. It's like the Basketball Jones, without the fun.
It really, you just let me know about this review. And it's a 2-star review. It's our first like bad review in like over 100 reviews. And it says that you try really hard, but you're not the smoothest podcaster, but it's genuine, so he appreciates it. And then it says, in contrast, I'm attempting to craft a version of myself. I employ an especially off-putting brand of condescension that is out of sync with my level of expertise. He's not sure if it's shtick or if he thinks that I think it reads as humorous, but it doesn't work. I'm just a dick. Like, that's just me. I don't know. It's not shtick. It's not me crafting a version of my... Like, this is just me. And I know I'm not for everybody. I recognized it myself a long time ago. But thanks for listening. Thanks for the review, I guess.
Yeah, thanks for the review. I still appreciate it. If you guys have more things that you want to tell us that we suck at, I'm okay with it. As long as you subscribe, I don't care.
I love constructive criticism. I love just criticism in general, as long as it's a little clever. This was clever. And I actually, I found it to be a hilarious review. And not like, oh, it's so dumb, it's hilarious. Like, I actually think that's a funny review.
Yeah. I'm going to put on my business cards now, Matt Moore, CBSSports.com, genuinely not a smooth podcaster. It's going on my guard. So we finished up our Hall of Fame thing yesterday. Thanks for all the feedback on that. We had a lot of fun with that. We are searching for things to get us through for the next – I will tell you this, though. I think Zach Lowe kind of said this on the BS report, and I agree. Like, we're kind of there, man. Like, it's started. Teams are – everybody's mostly back in town.
Yeah.
And we've got we're full into Lang Whitaker's tracking of who's gained and lost weight.
Muscle watch.
Darren Williams is already injured, so the year's definitely started.
Oh, we just talked about him.
We just talked about
like big year for him, needs to be healthy, needs to get back to being what he was, and who knows, maybe he'll be fine, but ugh.
Well, it's also like when I was like, oh, Darren got hurt, well, that's a bummer. I was like, well, as long as it's not the ankle, he's fine.
Right. Turns out
the one injury, it could be on the other foot, though. I will say this, I'm really bad at that. My editors are always yelling at me because they're like, you didn't say whether it was a right or left foot. I'm like, oh, who cares?
They're both
the same.
We do need – I wish Basketball Reference could do this where they could track the injuries.
Yeah.
And they just have that below the salary stuff so you know, is it left foot, right foot, left knee, right knee. The only injuries I remember are or it's just the one. It's just I know Rubio's left knee was torn. That's it. I couldn't tell you if it was Derrick Rose's left or right knee. I think it was the left, but I'm not sure.
This is like the worst trivia game of all time to play with your NBA friends and you're drinking. Like, let's play NBA injury trivia.
The only easy one is Andrew Bynum. You just know it's yes. Is it left knee or right knee? You just answer yes.
Funny story. Basketball Reference actually did try that. They modeled it. They had it in a preview type, and then they test ran it, and unfortunately, all the Blazers fans killed themselves. So.
Oh, that made me sad.
Oh, sad. I don't know, man. Where do you want to start? We start. I mean, Darren's injury is—he's supposed to be back for the start of camp. Everything's supposed to be fine. It's one of those where he could have not suffered this and then tweaked it on the first day of practice. He could,
right?
This could not bother him at all. So we're not going to freak out. Darren's thing is more of for me, a lot of what I do during the season is trying to remember things when you're looking for the big picture. It's you need to see the whole thing because we forget stuff and then it's oh yeah, this happened and then this happened and it happens a lot with injuries too, where guys are like. Wait, I thought he was like, well, he hasn't had any injury problems. And you're like, well, actually, he's kind of had some issues. Oh, interesting note. You and I talked about the him doing the platelet replacement therapy yesterday.
Yeah, sure.
I did find an article from one of the New York papers that was referenced on Pro Basketball Talk that he had 3 cortisone shots last year and then had the platelet replacement.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, I don't know why this is not a thing. Like, I get that the cortisone's not going to heal it, and the platelet made him feel better. But we saw with Dwayne Wade, like, the cortisone helps a lot.
Oh, it helps an immense amount. My dad actually had this like problem with his hand, and he would have to get a cortisone shot like twice a year. And it's amazing, like the difference that it had on him instantly. I mean, I think the weird thing with cortisone is like you can't have too much of it, I guess. And so I don't know. I don't know if three in a year is a lot for a guy, but that plus the plate, to me, that makes it seem like this is a serious injury that he never got over. And what if it's something that just keeps persisting? Like, let's say it's the same ankle. What if he's just in that mode of it's always going to be a problem to the point where eventually he starts overcompensating and it permeates into a problem in other areas of his body. Like, that's the thing I think I'm most worried with him, is those little nagging injuries that aren't serious but end up just plaguing you forever and keeping you from being 100%.
Also, one of the things with these new, I guess, with the medical advancements in terms of the foot injuries, the fact that they put everyone in a boot as a precaution has really messed with me, because if you tell the average fan this guy's in a boot, they're going to be like, what? And click, 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 click.
Yeah.
So you really want to put that in the headline, like, Darren Williams is in a boot. But now I really can't do that, because it's like, well, you know, it's like his toenail's gotten a little bit long. He's in a boot. Like, everyone.
the doctor tried to put me in a boot yesterday for my cracked knuckle.
Exactly. Like, everyone goes in a boot. Yeah. So it's like not a big deal. But when you even now that I know that, I still read that. I was like, oh, he's in a boot. And I was stopped and was like, wait, that's totally fine. It's like not a big deal at all for him to be in a boot.
And I think some Nets fans will be like, why are you guys even talking about this? You're freaking out. You're, you know, trying to find something wrong with him. And I think it's important that with an injury like this, yeah, he'll probably be fine for camp. But you wonder, like, maybe it persists a day into camp or 2 days into camp, and then, like I talked about earlier, like the overcompensation thing to different parts of your body. Like, I think that's just the thing you worry about, is he going to try to push it right away to kind of like prove a point, even if it's not fully healed? Like, that's the main thing I worry about with athletes, is the bravado and the, no, I'm fine, look, I'm not hurt at all, and then sometimes it ends up getting worse.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about the Chris Anderson thing.
Yes.
Which is one of the truly most bizarre stories I've read in a while, and I cover the NBA for a living. And it leads a little bit, I think, into some discussions of some things that go beyond this. So we'll talk a little bit about the Anderson thing, and then I have some thoughts on how writers and media respond to it, which I know everyone loves our media criticism, so sure, this should go well. So if you haven't read the story yet, SI.com did the groundwork. And it was one of those really weird things where I always thought to myself, like, I wonder what's going on with that Chris Anderson thing. And then SI did this and got quotes from the lawyer and the police department and the court's office to kind of lay out what happened, as well as some on background stuff. And I have a hard time adjusting the fact that I could have gone out and done this. Like, I live in Colorado. I could have gone down and talked to these people and probably done this. I always think, like, somebody should really look into that, and never think, oh, I could do that.
Oh, that could be me.
That I could actually earn my paycheck, as opposed to, you know, putting up videos of, oh, hey, here's Jeff Pendergraf, who's now Jeff Ayers, wearing a hat, you know, things like that.
Right.
So last year, during the playoffs in 2012, not last year, but the year before, Anderson was missing. Everybody's like, why isn't he playing? And then it turns out the police had raided his home and collected a bunch of his electronics equipment, and it was in connection with a case involving the Douglas County Sheriff's Office Crimes Against Children Division.
Right.
That's pretty much going to set off every red alarm that, I mean, if you hear that as like an owner, you're freaking out. As a media member, you're like, oh my God, because it's really hard not to be like, Chris Anderson's being investigated for child porn. Well, that's the implication.
Yeah, especially in a world where To Catch a Predator has not only been like a TV show, but it's become a meme.
Yeah.
Like, that's even where I think it becomes like a regular part of your thought process just instantly in situations like this, where you just hear a little bit of information and it's hard not to go to that place, right?
Right. And so I wrote the newser up on it. And the newser is basically, I put in like, you know, fact, block quote, fact, block quote, fact, block quote, because I was very specifically like, I do not know the situation. There's just not enough known. And that's a huge thing. And this is like an evolution, I think, from blogs. I think in earlier years, a lot of blogs, even for major sites, probably would have thrown in like some, this sure doesn't look good for Anderson. And now it's like, no, like, we don't know anything. If you don't know anything, if you don't have a single fact to work off, you really got to be careful.
Right.
And it turns out that, and the timeline of this is kind of fuzzy, and my editor and I actually kind of, one of my managers and supervisors and I kind of disagree on the interpretation of it. the facts are this. A 17-year-old girl posed as a 21-year-old girl, came to Colorado, provided, quote, required identification, which we'll get to in a second, slept with Anderson. Anderson broke it off, and she started, I guess, trying to extort slash blackmail him on some level. At the same time, the relationship had begun because a woman in Canada used identity theft to capture Anderson's – all of his electronics, including his Xbox, all of his media, his computer, everything that was electronic and connected to the internet in his house, and did this to several people across several states. Quiet little detail in the SI piece that people are brushing over, quote, other athletes may be involved.
Right.
And basically got on there, put a bunch of stuff on his computer, and started accessing people as Chris Anderson. So while this girl was pretending to be 21 when she was 17, this other person was pretending to be Chris Anderson when she was this person in Canada.
Right.
It's like a double catfish.
It's so much I just look at like things like identity theft and how much work it sounds like it goes into. Like, who has that kind of motivation? Do you really get that much out of it? Maybe it's just like the thrill-seeking thing. Like, to me, it's just like, my God, that sounds like so much work.
I don't know. I think that if you have a passion for something, Zach.
That's true. I mean, some people would say covering the NBA sounds like so much work.
I think a lot of people would say the amount of movies, the bad, terrible movies you watch sounds like a lot of work.
I do get a little offended when people think I only watch bad movies. I watch Hitch regularly. Hitch is a great movie.
And a romance, much like this one.
Yes. That's a weird story.
It's a weird story. And at the end of it, like, you feel really bad for Chris Anderson. Like, we had to kind of peel back on it. I wanted to start the piece with saying very up front, Chris Anderson is 100% innocent. That's the implication. Now, the sheriff's office and the county judge's office were both very much like, they don't deal with innocent versus guilty. They deal with, we're not charging him.
Right.
Like, there's nothing to charge. Like, we deal with facts, right? Like, it's not, we're not making an evaluation on Chris Anderson. It's, we're not charging him with anything.
Right.
We're under the impression that he is not, that there's been no wrongdoing here. The lawyer is the one that is like, totally innocent. And it's important, though. And this is, it's really key for media to follow up with stories like this and make sure that we post these things and share them, because we got to make sure it gets out that Anderson didn't do this. This is not something that he did.
I think it was during Las Vegas Summer League, where the whole Chris Anderson thing came up, or maybe it was even the playoffs. I know I was traveling somewhere and I was talking to someone, and the whole Chris Anderson thing came up, and even I was like, you know, God, like, I can't, like, did he really do this stuff? I can't believe this has happened there. And the person started explaining to me, no, this is actually, like, it looks like he was, like, kind of duped by multiple people, blah, blah, blah. And so I heard, like, a little bit here and there. But even then, like, I cover the NBA for a living. I had, like, even I had this kind of preconceived notion of, oh, crap, what if Chris Anderson did this stuff? And so I think your point is extremely important of, you get the, you like, little things like this leak out here and there, and that's the first impression of a story. So your first impression of a story, if you're a basketball fan, could be, well, Chris Anderson got busted for child porn, and the follow up to this can just be like, it's often, I feel like, it's just like, oh, by the way, Chris Anderson's fine, like, don't worry about that whole case. Where you kind of do need to do what you did and like explain, this is the fact, this is the fact, this is the fact, this is what they're saying. You know, help, like, you know, all those red flags, like, put them down. This is what has gone on. You need to know more of the specifics of the case, because, you know, it's always those retractions in a paper 3 days later, like on the, you know, the eighth page and a little block quote. Like, no one pays attention to that. They'll gloss over it, but then that first impression is still kind of in your mind.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it is that, you know, Chris Anderson investigated with Crimes Against Child Division is going to get, I mean, it was one of our most popular stories that month.
That's a big one.
Yeah. And but if you compare that also with, like, Chris Anderson didn't do anything wrong, it's like, oh, okay. But it's really important for everyone to realize, like, no, you need to, that thing that everyone freaked out about and started throwing judgments at needs to go away.
Right.
This does, however, kind of lead me into something else I started to talk about a little bit on Twitter yesterday, and I realized it's like, it's not a good medium for it. Like, most things, Twitter's not a good medium for.
Yes, pretty much everything.
Okay, so I don't hate sports radio as much as a lot of people do, but one thing that happens a lot on sports radio is that there starts to be talk, there's a lot of morality talk. It becomes a forum for a larger sociological issue, because you're talking to a broader audience. It's not just NBA fans or really even just sports fans. A lot of people are just like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of a sports fan, but not a huge one, but I listen to it in the radio. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on, and a lot of it's crap, like, you know, John Wall needs a father figure and crap like that.
Jesus.
But with what's going on with this situation, I feel like I did want to point out, this isn't a morality thing. Like, I want to make this up front. This is very clearly, I don't care what Chris Anderson does. I just don't. As long as it's legal,
right.
I don't care. And if it's illegal, it depends if I care or not. Like, there's a lot of things he could do that are illegal. I'd be like, I don't care. I don't care. If he gets busted for being back on heroin, which, by the way, he was very adamant when he was celebrating the championship, he couldn't drink, like, about how sober he's been. So it was, like, a big deal for him. But if he gets back into something like that, I would be like, that's a shame for him. I hope he gets help. But I'm not, like, angry. I'm not like, oh, terrible person. There's things he could do that would definitely influence that, but even then, it's not my business. Like, right. I have to deal with him, so it kind of sucks when you're like, I know this person did something real, like this, not Anderson, but there are situations where it's like, I have to interview this person, and I know that they did something very wrong in their past, and that is hard, right?
It's
your job, but it's hard. It's also hard because you kind of have to be like, hey, what's up? Because you can't be like, I don't like you, but let's do this interview. That's probably not going to go well in terms of getting the quotes that you need.
Right.
This is a roundabout way to say, I don't understand why this person shows up and he has to, like, if you have to have someone show you identification to prove who they are and how old they are, the entire situation probably does not merit a sexual relationship. Like, this isn't a morality thing. This is not, he shouldn't do this. It's stay out of trouble. Like, it feels to me, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday that was really interesting because they talked about how basically you can't trust anyone, and everyone that they meet, especially in a non-online setting, they know immediately who you are, so you know that you can't trust them because they could be targeting something that you have.
Right.
So online is like a better way to get to know people, but I just keep going back to, like, y'all need to, like, meet women in a better situation.
Well, I think the problem is that we're never, I mean, even if we got to the top of the journalism industry, like, we're never going to understand the fame and lifestyle that these guys are in, even the lesser players. Like, it's just such a known target for a lot of people. I don't look at that as, like, a red flag necessarily, just because I think with that kind of situation, I'm assuming, like, even if you met someone in a bar and they look young, you know, people get into bars underage every night. And I think that's something where that might just be a regular thing for them of, like, you look young, I need to know that you're actually of age.
No, and I'm not saying it's like a – I'm not saying this is all at all a red flag on Anderson. I'm saying it's absurd that we live in a world where Chris Anderson has to check out your ID before he sleeps with you. Like, that's nuts inherently. But to me, it also brings up, like, the fact that – and this is something that's basically never going to be able to be done – again, this is not like a morality podcast, so who cares, but I just want to stress, I don't have a moral problem with what anyone chooses to do with anyone else on a consensual level, as long as it's legal, above the legal age. Important note here, she was 17, Colorado's legal age is 17. Chris Anderson did nothing illegal in the situation.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah, so even though she catfished him, she wasn't, like, she was not underage. He didn't, I guess, he wasn't duped into statutory rape, is the implication there. So it's like, it would have been really crappy if that happened, because it's like, he did something illegal without knowing it. That'd be terrible.
But, right.
You know, anyway, regardless, it's like, I don't – as long as it's two consensual adults above the legal age, I don't have any sort of problem with it, even if it's like not something, a decision I would make. I don't care. It's like, well, that's fine. You can do whatever you want. Who am I to judge? Like, I'm not here to judge you. I'm more of a – like, I don't – I guess I wonder if the 22-year-old me would feel differently. If the 22 and 25 and even 27-year-old me would feel differently.
Well, I would hope so. I think it's ridiculous. Like, most people change a lot of their perspective on things as they gain more experience.
Yeah. And, like, as I'm 31, I'm really looking back and being like, guys, like, I've been there. I understand. Like, I'm a dude. is sex really this important that you're going to risk everything that can happen to you? And it kills me because I talked to Damian Lillard for this NBA Live thing I did a couple weeks ago and about the rookie transition program. And like the rookie transition program, they hammer you with, here's this guy that got screwed over by an accountant. Here's this guy that got screwed over by his agent. Here's this guy that had this terrible thing happen to him. And all of this stuff happens to him, and yet they still, because they get sucked into how powerful it feels to be a professional athlete, that they open themselves up for these things. And it's more of a, I just want players to protect themselves.
Well, yeah, I think that's where it comes into the point of, if you're ahead of your class in a thing, in a field that gets you instant notoriety and almost instant wealth by the time you're 18, 19, 20 years old, I think that, and people are trying to latch on to you at 12 years old because they think you're going to become something, and people just start feeding your ego. Like when you're that age, if someone's telling you how great you are from the age of 13, if you're not an egomaniacal prick when you're 20, that's almost a miracle, right? I mean, that is a miracle, because your formative years, people are just telling you how great you are, how great you are, how great you are. And that's why I never, like, athletes who have egos and who are very, you know, just into themselves and very selfish, like, I never have a problem with it, as long as they're not doing anything illegal or anything immoral. Like, I never have a problem with it, because I just think, like, if someone told me I was the greatest thing in the world since I was 13, you know, that I don't see how you couldn't be the same way, how you couldn't have the same personality. Now, you can have parenting, you can have, you know, family figures or friends or family friends or whatever who can kind of keep you grounded, but there's only so much that can break into you when you have everyone else around you all day, every day, telling you how great you are. And so when they've had the ego fed and then they're given, you know, a large amount of money right away as they turn professional, that's something where it's like, all of these guys do need to be beaten over the head with, don't screw up. Don't let these bad situations happen to you, because I'm sure there is a Superman complex with everybody. I mean, everyone that comes into the league that gets a big contract, a guaranteed contract for 2 years, maybe 4 years if you're lucky, and it's the point where all you did growing up was have this ego fed, and now it's been justified because you have this money. How could you not feel that powerful?
Yeah, I mean, I made that point yesterday when I was talking about it on Twitter, and it's an important one to repeat. Like, I've never been there. I've never been anything close to that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any idea what it's like to have everything thrown at you like that. I don't have any idea what it's like to have that money. I don't have any sort of idea. So there's definitely some sort of disconnect. I keep wanting the players to do a better job of getting through to one another, because there are some guys that do get it, and to be like, you've got to protect yourself. You've got to be more careful. You need to be very specific with who you let have access to your person, because I will say it's disgusting that we live in a world where they have to be like that, though.
Everyone is trying to,
the more you see it in the NBA, like, it's permeated throughout the culture from a corporate standpoint, from how, like, you can make the argument that there's a relationship between the owners and the players like that. There's definitely a relationship with the agents and the players, and the agents and the teams, and the players and the teams. The players are trying to use the teams to further their own pursuits, all this kind of thing. Like, everyone's using each other constantly. It's why I think a lot of writers, and there was, you know, some backlash against Jason Quick, who wrote about kind of his experience on the Blazers beat, but a lot of guys have been there and are like, it's pretty grimy. It gets pretty grimy after a while dealing with this culture and lifestyle every day.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see it. I mean, in the small amount of time that I have been covering the NBA, it's changed my perspective immensely on how I view the league, how I view these players, and it's something where, I mean, you and I probably have experienced a lot. You see a lot of these beat writers who are in your city or come into the city with the visiting team, and I would say half these guys hate the NBA at this point. You've been doing it, you know, 15, 20 years. It feels like half of them really dislike what they do, but it's what they know, so they keep doing it. But they're almost just disgusted with it because, you know, growing up, you have this mindset of how great things are and how great they're supposed to be, and then it just gets destroyed. You find out Santa Claus isn't real. Spoiler alert, for any 8-year-olds listening, I hope I didn't just ruin your Christmas.
Yeah, because that's the worst thing they're going to get from this podcast. Interesting note, though, there. Every guy that's like that, they're almost always media lifers. They're guys that went to journalism school, got out, started covering a high school paper, and they think they're like, oh, I know how hard and how grimy this job is. And every time I just want to be like, I'm going to go take you, and you're going to work at a desk job for 6 months, and we're going to see whether or not you want to come back to watching professional basketball every night. Like, no matter how bad this gets for me or how burnout I feel, I know what it's like to have a real job.
Yes, yeah. Being in the arena kind of washes all that away for me, even if it's for a couple hours.
Well,
like, whatever grind, I just, like, you get in there, ball the jump ball tips, and I just kind of like, all right, this is cool. This is a cool gig.
And for me, honestly, not to get too wrapped up in my own work, because what I write isn't great, but when I write something and I'm proud of it, that was my job. I got paid to write something that was about something I care about. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah. To kind of piggyback on that, like, a lot of the stuff I won't even really promote that much because I'm just like, it was a job I did. It was a task I did. But like when I wrote the 3-point piece, or I'm sure when you write like the behind the screen stuff, like you do that and you're like, that was kind of cool. Like, it's not the greatest thing that's ever going to be written, but that one I liked. That was a feather in my cap.
See, I'm more like, that may be the best thing I'm ever going to write. That may be it. Before we go, Iguodala said yesterday in his introductory presser that two things. One, he says that he doesn't feel like enough people noticed or he got enough credit for the Nuggets last year. Thanks, Andre. Appreciate that. No problem. I spent every single day writing about it, but it's cool, man. Have fun.
I don't know that you spent every single day writing about it.
And then he did say that he wants them to. They're targeting more than 50 wins, is the quote.
Yeah,
That seems easy. That seems easy for me.
Yeah, I mean, what did they get last year? 47? 48? Something like that?
Yeah. So I'm getting ready to write about that. But
yeah, they have 47
wins. They're going to lap that easy if they stay healthy, right?
Yeah, oh, if they're healthy? Yeah, I think they're healthy, 52, 53. Like, that's in that range. Especially the fact, well, I think we talked about this during their offseason report, but they match up really well with the Lakers. The Kings always give them a weird trouble, but you know, you would think that they could do some damage against them, and then they've got the Suns in their division. So like that's potentially, you know, 10, 11, 12 wins right there. That's pretty good.
What's the best thing you've read in the last couple of days?
Oh, no question. Jonathan Abrams, this guy.
That guy.
I wish he wasn't nice. I wish he was a terrible human being, because it's frustrating how good he is sometimes. He had his post today on Grantland is about Corleone Young, who maybe not a lot of people would recognize the name. He was one of the high school to NBA guys in the 90s, I believe, right? Late 90s. After KG, after Kobe. And this guy was the real deal. Like, he was dominant in high school. And he lasted a year in the NBA. And he's one of the poster children for why we had the rule in 2005 of no more high school to NBA guys. And because of stories like his, it's wonderfully written. Some people have been like, I get it, the NBA's hard. But, like, the way Abrams goes about it, he fleshes out the entire story and crafts it in a way that is just, it's beautiful to read. Like, it really is. Like, you read it and you just feel like you're smarter as a person and as a basketball fan. And that came out today. I highly recommend that. Like, that's just an awesome, awesome piece. What about you?
There's some good stuff out there. They're writing. There's been a lot of good stuff. Oh, if you can, check out Piston Power's got a thing on how about Bill Laimbeer kind of ruined his chances of becoming an NBA head coach.
Yeah, that was really good. That was really good.
That was really interesting.
I think
Kate Fagan kind of too.
48 Minutes of Hell has a really good thing on Kawhi Leonard right now.
That is shocking to me. Did Matt Tynan write it?
Yes.
Of course Matt Tynan wrote it. Jesus.
He's very good.
He's
very good.
Yeah, he's very good, but he's also... He also thinks Kawhi is going to be like some sort of Tracy McGrady LeBron Jordan hybrid. So
yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I agree, but it's well done.
Marcus Gasol had a crazy pass in Eurobasket.
Oh my god, that was sexy. Oh, I lit some candles. I rewound it. Yeah, this like this discus throw. Like, it was like an Olympic discus throw, and it was the crazy thing is like he's such a good passer that it was off like maybe 3 feet to the right of where it should have landed, but his teammate still grabbed it and laid it in for a basket. But it's this full court discus like 90-foot pass, and the fact that it was like 3 feet to the right, I was kind of like, eh, he could have done better. It's an insane pass, but he's that talented.
One of the things that's been awesome about him is that as time has gone on, he's gotten more and more willing to take risks.
Yeah.
He used to be very – like when he started out, he was very careful and very meticulous about everything he did. And as time has gone on, he's kind of been more of a, let's see if this works.
It's like the montage in any superhero movie where the guy's realizing his powers.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. He's like, hey, I can make that full court pass. Hey, I can drop that between my legs. Like, I can do all this stuff. This is great.
By the way, Isaiah Thomas obviously listens to this podcast because he's Isaiah Thomas, Sacramento Kings point guard, and that's what he does, and sure. I'm sure he's listening every single day.
Sure.
I love Isaiah Thomas, and now he's mad at me because of that stupid article that I responded to in a joking fashion. Ugh, I hate it when this happens. I hate when players think I'm dissing them, especially when I like them. Like, Spencer Hawes wants to come at me. That's fine. I there's no way for me to get around that. But
wait, why is he mad at you? Let's flesh this out a little bit.
Oh, some person wrote a thing questioning, is Isaiah Thomas as good as Kyrie Irving? And
why would you write that?
I don't know. And there's a video with it, and it's been posted. And so everyone flipped out. And then like it got picked. And then Kyrie responded to it on Twitter, which don't ever respond to us. We're idiots. Like, I'm going to tell Isaiah that. Like, never respond to me. I'm a moron. Like, don't ever do that. We're beneath you. We are the mere mortals.
Except
the gods up in Persepolis.
Except for you, Spencer Hawes.
Except for you, Spencer.
Bring it on.
So I said in a couple months when Kyrie drops 40 on the Kings, Isaiah's going to be like, I never asked for this. Just because it's like Isaiah Thomas is a good player too. That was kind of my point. And then Isaiah Thomas just tweeted me and said, "You better try again. That's not happening on me. I don't care who it is. Know that." And I'm just like, now I have to go find out who's dropped 40 on the Kings.
Oh God. I mean, like I get the. Like,
it was my fault for making the snarky comment. I deserve it. It was my fault for making.
Was he tagged in it?
No.
So he's searching his name.
Oh, somebody, some fan probably tagged him because they thought I was making fun of Isaiah or something.
I do like that. I do like when that happens. I'm like, why are you including them? Are you hoping they? I never get
that. This is what they're hoping happens. Show that hater. You know, because it's like, if I respond to Isaiah, Isaiah's not going to carry on a conversation with me.
Right.
Like, he's going to think I'm just another hater. This is what drives me nuts. I'm like, no! I love you. You're amazing.
I'm actually, I think we talked about this a little bit. I don't know if we ever talked about it on the podcast, but when Mark Cuban kind of came after you.
Yeah.
About Vince Carter, and I was just like, for me personally, if that happens, I'm like, yeah, let's go. Let's have it out. Let's have a discussion about this. Let's do this. And I wanted you to like go at him, and you were just kind of like, okay, I'm sorry. And I was just like, no, you've got a chance. Go after him. You have his attention.
We'll talk tomorrow about that. I gotta go. By the way, Mario Chalmers on January 12th dropped 34 on the Sacramento Kings.
Baller.
So anyway, we'll talk tomorrow.
Yep.
All right, man. Thanks.
Thanks, man.